Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Thanks for tuning in right here in Mass, listeners. Joining us today is Chef Brian Poe, a seasoned and skilled chef who has continuously pushed himself and his food to the max for the past three decades. Chef Poe is currently the owner of the Tip Tap Room, Crane River Cheese Club, Chef Poe Inc., and Le Poe Farms. Chef Poe, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Please share more with our audience about yourself and what you do.
I was born and raised as sort of a Southern boy, and I was born in Georgia and went off to start cooking in Auburn, Alabama, and then kind of there really fell in love with it, got into the Olympics in Atlanta, and then came across Scottsdale in LA, and along the way became a guest chef at the Bostonian. Then I became extremely interested in traveling and learning about food. So I've done 38 states and 24 countries worth of study and travel and fun. Wow. And so I try and bring all that to the restaurants and to the things that we do. So the Tip Tap Room is a fun room where I get to work with Chef Guillermo Guzman. And we get to create a lot of fun things with everything from wild game. The concept really started as, steak tips of all varietals. We've also got like everything from lowbrow to highbrow, kind of fun cuisine that is, and I don't even know which one's which anymore, lowbrow to highbrows. So we have a lot of fun with doing the wild game dishes. We do a lot of really unique specials. He's a very talented chef to work with. So I get to be a kid in the kitchen with him. And I joke, I got promoted to food runner there. So I also get to work the floor a lot and enjoy the people of our neighborhood in Beacon Hill. And in the 2020, we all went through that craziness, and I started a little business. I live on the Crane River in Danvers, and so I started the Crane River Cheese Club in Danvers. Now I can say it out of my garage. So with the LLC of the Le Poe Farms, I was deemed a farm and was able to also use that LLC to get deliveries and got a couple of like hawkers permits and things like that to be able to deliver food across the state. So it out of nowhere, first was like, someone I was delivering to was friends with a food writer from the Globe that then wrote about it, then chronicled, and a lot of great press came with it. And next thing you know, like I said, I was all over the state delivering with me and my dog Salty. And then as we reopened here, as a thank you to the neighborhood for supporting us so much, we wanted to give back some of those ingredients that I have access to, from everything from the farms to the city of Boston has a lot of access to good things. But like I literally am going to cut the lettuce with the farmer in the morning and bring it down here and sharing it with our neighbors. We have a fun little sandwich menu that's written completely off of the stuff that we get from the farms. So like it's a super fresh little sandwich shop along with a boutique beer and wine program we have, as well as catering out of there and a lot of things. So it's taking a little bit about me is like taking, it's a big loaded question and answer with my hyperactive child with all these little outlets to play. So it's fun.
Yeah. And I just love that you've done so much, and I'm excited to dive into everything that you're doing throughout this episode, but I'd like to take a step back and first ask you, what inspired you to become a chef in the first place?
I grew up like cooking for my mom, who was blind type thing, but it wasn't like chef. It was tater tots and beef. it wasn't like fancy stuff, but I literally like, I was in landscape design going off to college and then fell into a job that was like, this is fun. And it wasn't like the, I like the grimy, dirty rock and roll. It was like, this is just really fun to create something fresh from scratch every single day. And so that's that kind of, once I got that bug and the travel bug combined, and plus I started in hotels at the Sears Park. So you ended up with like $25 room rates anywhere in the world that they had a hotel. So The group I was with had 225 hotels. So that combo package of learning and working with things from scratch and building something new every day. And that part, plus the camaraderie of the team, plus the everyday learning something, and then the learning about other countries and getting to work across, like a goat might be cooked one way in South America, might be cooked another way in the islands, and somewhere different across the same latitude in China or in Vietnam, type area, where just the variety of things that you can do with one ingredient.
Absolutely. And I know you mentioned too, at the very beginning of this episode, that you've traveled to many states and even countries that have really influenced your taste and what you're offering within your menus. But is there anything else that kind of inspires what you offer to your guests throughout your restaurant?
I think a lot of times, one of the things, at the Le Poe Farms aspect of things, like you get the email from, say, the produce company, which they're trying to market. And I joke that the egg has probably the best publicist I've ever seen, because I've seen it on the cover of the Wall Street Journal talking about what you can do type thing. But it's when you look and get that email and they say strawberries are in season, you walk out your front door or walk out the side of a farm nearby and look, and it's actually not growing yet. You know, so you kind of like, we're getting someone else's, and it's hard. New England's not, you don't have strawberries year round. Nobody mm-hmm. should, but we do. You know, so it's like buying from the world. So I think like being able to walk out the door and pick a strawberry, stop by Valley View Farms in Topsfield and pick up the cheese from the goats that you're looking at in front of you, stop by sort of the Ramblin' Roots Farm and pick up the arugula, and then come down with Chef Guillermo and make a really cool vinaigrette. So that very bottom moment, spring through fall, you know, through the end of this fall thing, is really exciting to me. And then you start to, I love what inspires me, having cooked all over the country like that, what I found that was, Arizona was incredible food and cuisine and style. What I found most fascinating here in New England is that we can actually change, like, though the menu, you know, the joke is the weather's, you know, if you don't like the weather in New England, wait 10 minutes, I think. We can do the same thing with our food, and it actually feels right to cook certain types of food certain times of year. Because this is a perfect tomato, this is a perfect strawberry, this is a perfect filet or goat, you know, and things like that. So then as you get into the winter months, you also feel better about, this is a perfect celery root, or this is the you respect the flow, and that inspires me, because I'm looking at the weather outside and it's about to snow, so we'll make a wild game cassoulet tonight or something like that. That's what draws me into it.
Yeah, and you mentioned too supporting local farms, which I think is also great to incorporate into your overall cuisine and what you're offering.
Yeah, that's we have one. They like, it's like a little garlic flour, but they're like these little cloves inside the flour. And like the other day, we got that, and you just like sprinkled on top of salmon, and you didn't have to do anything; it was just there, and it happened yeah. because they threw the donut, the surprise at us. So that's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And so throughout your career of being a chef, what made you realize that you wanted to start your own restaurant and then also eventually start your own store with the Crane River?
I was times with it, like I never really stood up and said, hey, I'm going to open a restaurant one day. It just kind of everything just fell into place along the way. So I moved very high up into hotels, and I was at the Bostonian Hotel there when there was a restaurant there called Seasons. And I ended up kind of wearing two hats as both a food and beverage director and chef during, you know, a stretch there. And it was interesting because suddenly I was learning about the entire building. I was learning about there's a drip up on the 8th floor, how it could affect your 4th floor restaurant, just because the people I was around. And suddenly all the tools that I was collecting along the way, not even realizing, just being open-minded and open to conversations, all those things I learned along the way, suddenly in around 2008, I was like, let's go for it, which of course that was the crash of the economy and whatnot, but it was like yeah. kind of a holding pattern that landed me, that landed me into sort of the independent side of the restaurants, where I ended up at the Rattlesnake Bar and Grill, and became Poe's Kitchen at the Rattlesnake. And in that process, that took me even further into engaging in becoming the Tip Tap Room after that, and several restaurants along the way. Lost a little, you know, a few during the pandemic, we still maintained 5 jobs, if you will. So it's like that sort of inspiration came from like just the people that were around me throughout my career, and especially that last 20 years in Boston drove me towards like really wanting to do this. So yeah. it's been a fun learning curve, and you know, I've had some great partners, great friends that work with along the way, so it's been good.
I can imagine. And so having gone high up the ranks through the restaurant and the hotel, and then having your own, I guess, freestanding restaurant is the best way to put it. What are the differences between the two, between having almost like an independent restaurant and a restaurant that's in a hotel?
I think the biggest learning curve is bookkeeping, right? Like, so, you know, you have accounts, yeah. you have millions of dollars coming through the building at the hotel, and your food cost is like 12% because you have $28 eggs at breakfast, and there's just and banquets for 20,000 things. So the readjustment to still serving the high quality, you know, camel yak ostriches, the filet mignons, the things that we still serve, being able to choreograph that, right? Cause, you know, it's just a different learning curve. The other side is like the freedom. I was always in hotels, restaurants that gave me a lot of freedom. Like the Pinion Grill in Scottsdale was free to the people I worked with. They gave me a lot of freedom to work that menu, even as I got, you know, into the Boston area. Always given freedom, but then you sort of have to stop and go, okay, what of this is going to pay the bills, and what of this is going to pay the staff, and what of this is going to feed my hobby and my fun? So I've been very lucky so far to be. I'm not going to want to be able to continue to create like that. And then, like I said, with the So the restaurant side of things, the next step for me that was wild was then going into understanding retail profits. So all this creative energy and things that I have as the artist, I never really until owning a restaurant had to, getting in an independent situation, did I have to really begin to understand all those pieces of the puzzle. So in a restaurant, I can now walk in, and I have been able to since sort of my corporate hotel days, I could walk in and look at the room and tell you roughly what we're doing in revenue that night. And you can begin to get a rhythm of what's coming next. In a retail shop, you look at it and you're like, I don't know. One person comes in and buys a Taza chocolate, and the next person comes in and buys $200 of filet mignon, and another person comes in and says, can you do a catering event for us for 130 people? And you know, so it's like it's a different flow of things, but I think standing back and taking that deep breath and going, all right, we are there. It's just, we'll continue pushing forward, and the rewards become greater and greater as you go.
Yeah, absolutely. And would you say that you might prefer having the retail store versus the restaurant or vice versa? Or do you like them both equally, but in different ways?
I like them both equally and in the same ways. Almost like, so it's a full outlet for creativity. The retail shop sort of opens the hood up to my refrigeration downstairs in the Tip Tap room because they're right next to each other. So you may have only thought of us as taps, draft beer, or steak tips. But when you suddenly look and realize through a window walking by or coming in to grab a piece of cheese as you're going home for the night, you look up and go, wow, these are the same people. And that's the ingredient that I use. So it's fun. We had one neighbor that's a great friend. She came and she said she wanted to cook dinner for her husband. So she goes, like, guide me through it. Said fresh corn from the farm. She wanted a filet or New York, so I got her a New York strip. I gave her the spice rub that's made from all the dried ingredients from the farms. And we rub the steak. You're going to grill this. You're going to make the corn this way. And you're going to take the Mexican crema that we have. Then you're going to take the veal stock reduction that we make. You're going to use that. It's, you know, sort of a 24 to 48 hour process. So all they had to do, she had to do then, was season, grill, pour sauce over. She bought wine at the shop as well and serve. And she said, I'm just going to surprise my husband and tell him I cooked it. And her husband came down the next day and said, thanks so much. Dinner was awesome. Right? So I think it's by opening the engine, the hood of the engine at the restaurant, with the shop, you could come in and we'll cook dinner for you. Or you can stop by on your way out there. Because I joked with one friend when I was single, I would go in to have a couple of years or whatever, and I would completely forget that I was supposed to go to the grocery store. So now you got your shop next door, right? Whatever you said you're going to bring, you got the bread, the tomatoes, and all that. But then, you know, there's things, moments where, like, we have a great draft beer that might be available to take by the can on your trip to Cape Cod. To Cape Cod. So there's like a unique mix of things going on there. And now with the catering aspect, all these buildings up across the street that we never really had ever gone into, if you go into things like 110 Sudbury, it's gorgeous. If you go into the places down in the south, the garden area there, mm-hmm. West End and things, there's a lot of beautiful things there. So suddenly it's made this full circle of now I know you, and I know, like, we now have a relationship. It's not me just running out to the table, touching the table, going, how's your food, and running back to the kitchen. It's now we have a conversation about how you like to cook. And I think that is probably was the scariest thing for a lot of restaurants, to know that everybody's going to start to really learn how to cook at home. But it's also one of the greatest things, because it's really nice to hear. And it was my favorite things during the pandemic, was to get a texted picture of what somebody cooked tonight while they were at their cabana at your place. Right. So it's a pool area down the street, to then get to know what they like to cook, because used to, I told you what you're going to eat tonight, and that's the way it is. Whereas now, that's also inspirational, like to see what you might cook tonight with the ingredients I gave you. And I often talk about music and food, where we're all given the same notes on the piano, but salt, pepper, garlic, whatever you name it. But then you come up with a different chord than I did, and it's a really unique conversation to talk about what you're cooking versus what I'm cooking. So to me, it's been like a refreshing way to reset the industry and keep pushing forward.
I can imagine. And with the catering component that you have, what inspired that to come about? Did you have companies or anyone approaching you inquiring about it, or was it something that just made sense naturally to lead into?
I think it's just sort of made sense. I think somebody asked about it and it's just like, let's do it. And the next thing you know, I just, you know, it took off. I remember being at a reception with some friends, and they literally, you should get Brian to pay cater your party. And I was like, never thought of that. So we did the first one, it was great. And then after that, it was like, it's an opportunity to do it. And we've even done things where, like, for Access Sport America, a charity that I worked for 20 plus years, they wanted to do their party at Malibu Beach in Dorchester. So we were able to pull that off for him. We did an amazing barbecue, and it's just all the food I've cooked throughout my career. And Chef Guzman with me, we just go, this is fun, let's go. And so we wait for the customer to come in for dinner service for reservation, we can gladly go to you now. And that's, I think that's where just the sense of the fear of 2020 going into the sense of freedom, we're back, let's do this for our neighborhood, just open that door on its own. And I'm not complaining. And not just from the, it's not even a financial thing. It's more, again, like we are living food together type thing. You know, yeah. So it's like used to, a catered event used to be just a wedding. A catered event could be in support of our neighbor who supports the New England Aquarium type thing. So it's like, and sustainability. And this is, you now know more about that person that they believe so strongly in sustainability. And again, that's a lot better than just salt, pepper, garlic, and chicken wings. Like, there's a whole lot more to it.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about food being part of a community. I mean, I feel like food brings people together when they find something that they have in common or being able to have conversations about it. And I can imagine that you witness that daily in all of your businesses that you have.
It's amazing. Even like through, there's a new beverage that's doing it. I think it's fantastic. It's called Motto, and it's like a soft drink made with like natural tea product type thing. It's like a meeting the person that works with that led to a conversation of what she adds to her drink, then also led to a conversation about really talented chefs that I know that are doing like private dinners at people's home for 10 people on a regular basis, not as a catered thing, but like that's just what they do now. And even the food they cook and the things they like, and like that she mentioned like a cheese that I wasn't sure if people would like. She's like, oh, I'm so glad you have that cheese. And again, like I said, it just adds depth and friendship and kindness, you know, back to what we do.
Absolutely. And I believe you mentioned that with your restaurant, you have a partner. Is that correct?
I'm partners with Nick Giannotti at the Crane River Cheese Club. He's also the general manager of the Tip Tap Room and the beverage director there. So he's a great guy, super calm, down to earth, doesn't like intimidate you with this, because there's a lot of hops, a lot of things that you can learn in the beverage programs. And he's just kind of like, hey man, what's up? And next thing you know, you got like a great beer that fits your style and your palate. So it's fun for us to both play next door at the Tip Tap and on the draft lines, and then move right into the beers that we sell and wines that we sell next door at the Crane River. So it's a great relationship. He and I have worked together for 10 plus years, and just, you know, he was always the taps, I was always the tips, and we just like rocked out. So it was a no brainer for us to work together.
Yeah. And would you say that the both of you have like complementary skills and interests, or like do you have good strengths in one area and then he has good strengths in another that really comes and ties together nicely?
Yeah, I think it's hard to like pinpoint, because there's like we get on the soccer field and kick the ball back and forth and score. You know, like it's a that type thing. And but he's more of a golfer, but it is the type thing where we just get in there and do it. And because we've known each other for a long time, there's an old management philosophy I talk about, like with younger management, where it's like forming, storming, norming, and performing. And you form the team, then you got storm, and you got to norm, and then you got to perform. In the restaurant industry, you get like every day you're storming because there's a new server, there's a new cook, there's all these things. What I love about working with Nick, and we have Tracy and Guillermo as well, and Anna, that what I like is that there's less storming because we recognize that part. And so by having worked together for a while, we're not all freaked out about that. We're all going to get in there and work together and have fun. And then we'll check in the shop in between and come back. And so the hyperactivity, again, like busy brunch or lunch, and then run next door and work in the shop for a little while and come back next door and work out, you know, for a pregame show type thing. And the movement of it, we do very well together. We're not bumping into each other. We're working the same field.
That's great. And with having the Tip Tap Room and the Crane River Cheese Club both in Boston, what made you want to choose Boston's food scene specifically to kind of settle down compared to the many other places that you've been?
It's interesting because I came out here as the guest chef at the Bostonian Hotel. And so when I checked in, the gentleman at the front desk, he said, oh, you're the guest chef. I said, yeah, I'm here just for a couple of months. He goes, yeah, last guy that said that has been here for 20 plus years. And I was like, yeah, no. I live in beautiful sunny Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm not moving yet. And somehow, like through that process, what happened was that I fell in love with the city. Someone told me they were sitting and they were like drinking Opus One in the afternoon, like that kind of restaurant type thing. And they said, Brian, give it 2 years before you actually make a decision on New England, like before you judge it. I was like, wow, because I came from like when we got out of work, every single person, if you've ever flown into Scottsdale, you see nothing but swimming pools as you land, and so everybody had a pool in the backyard. So getting out of work meant go out and then go to somebody's backyard and hang out by the pool and go back to work the next day type thing. Whereas, and it was weird to to do a braised short rib in February when it's 80 degrees. It's kind of odd, you know? So we did it because we thought it was cold at 80, you know? So, but then as I, you know, one day I took a train, took the Blue Line and ended up at Revere Beach type thing. I was like, wow, the ocean. Little did I know how beautiful the rest of the oceans here are on New England coastline.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty cool. And it was 90 degrees that day. And I was like, this is, you know, it was 120 in Scottsdale in the summer. I was like, I'll check it out. So as I got here, I suddenly looked up and this research that I was doing about for seafood, I was like, well, there's Ipswich. I'll go over there and check that out. I started to be able to find all the fish and all the research I'd done for seafood. It was right in front of me. And then as we got, you know, went along, it just kind of everything fell in place for all the stuff that I love food wise and rhythm of cooking wise was all here. So that just was like a no brainer. I looked at doing, you know, something, it's still on my radar, but like doing something in the suburbs type thing could be nice, but I also enjoy the camaraderie of what's around us in the city once you get to know everybody. So that 2 year marker, when I was talking about the pools and whatnot, the 2 year marker, man, I got to see a real 3 foot snowstorm and cook and braise lamb, my own kitchen at the house. Excuse me. So the interesting thing was like I said, cooking, braising your own, staying inside and cooking and having enough wine to do, you know, to get through it type thing. And then springtime, we've seen more rain and stuff, but still starting to see the right time again when you get an email saying that fiddleheads are out, and then you wait and you look and you see the fiddleheads come out here, and you're like, this is the real deal. I smell it now. I can be part of this and cook it. And then you move into the next phase is summer where everybody goes out to the beach because they were hibernating, and everybody comes back to town. And right now, September, October, you're just hanging out again, lots of parties, lots of things going on. And then, you know, December becomes the most beautiful Christmas. So all those rhythms combined are what I love about cooking in Boston, plus the access to everything for, you know, all of New England is amazing to me. So having the central hub, having friends that pass through the city from all over the country, having friends that live in the city that are also from all over the country and world, I love that mix. I love being able to, at the hotel back in the day, a joke that you could say thank you in 17 different languages. And I love that we have that in our diners as well. I love the mix of the city.
I love that. So I imagine it must be funny now that that conversation that you had when you first arrived in Boston, that you never would have thought that you'd stay here. Now you're looking back like, oh, wow, look at how the tables have turned.
Yeah, I've settled in.
Do you think that you would ever go back to Scottsdale or even perhaps open something somewhere else in the country? Or do you feel like Boston is where you will always stay?
I'm happy here, but I joke that I like January. Our neighbor told me this joke and I was stuck with it, but I love winter up until January 4th. I think the winters are brutal, but my wife's Brazilian. So we fly down for a couple of weeks to kind of reset that button and reheat. But as we were establishing the relationship in the tip tap room and finalizing the paperwork and things, I said, if this doesn't work, I'll move to Florida. I'll sell coconut water and beer and we'll just raise the kids down there and live a warmer life. And then when I finalized the deal in the middle of February, she says, I said, honey, we did it. We pulled it off. She said, so we're not moving to Florida. So I actually sometimes I think it would be a fun connection. If I want to take this past year and a half to really settle down from what happened in 2020, just get the rhythm back the right where the pulse feels better. It's still crunchy, but it's getting better, you know? And so as we do that, then I would consider a warmer climate for sure. Scottsdale was great to me. And I have a lot of great, great friends out there. But again, it will be what's the easiest way to get to Brazil there in a snowstorm. So close to the better type thing.
Absolutely. And with having your hands in so many things and having so many businesses, how do you juggle them all?
I think it took me time to get there, but I think that before the pandemic, I was sort of running to each kitchen window, to make specials, do the things. And I think that as we now have come back into it, I've reapproached how I do that. So I've got it, like I said, I work with Chef Guillermo, who's incredible. So I have good people around me. And I know that's almost cliche to say, but I actually really do now. And I appreciate them. And in that process, then we can talk to each other and it's not so manic and crazy and chaotic. It's actually straightforward. Okay, in the morning, I'll take care of the grown-up stuff that I used to not have to do. So I can do the grown-up stuff from my home office. And then when it's time for brunch, I can head down. And then strangely, in the middle of that, I have a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old. So they are so therapeutic and readjusting what is the priority at 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning. They get up a little earlier than that. But it helps you to say, okay, this is the priority right now. while meanwhile I could be thinking about the issue that is happening, at least I'm thinking to myself, my employees and staff also have children they're trying to take care of, so I'm not going to call and start screaming about it right now. I'm going to take a deep breath and let them also adjust in how they need to land. And it seems to be the calmer we approach that, the better we are at getting things done.
Yeah.
Right. So I actually, like, each night and each morning I do, it's again, I've done it since, I don't know who I heard it from or what star it was, but I've done this since I was a young cook, to write down the, I write everything down in the morning that I want to get done. I write everything down before I go to sleep. And so somewhere in between there, when I write it down at the end of the day, I actually knock five things off my list because everybody was asleep. And then the next morning I regrouped and we had another way to go. Knowing that some of those things won't get done, but at least like I know that I can tell you that 9 o'clock I'll be here, 10:30 I'll be at the bank, 11:30 I'll be at the restaurant, 12:30 I'll be at a kitchen window somewhere, and then 1 o'clock I'll probably be next door working with the groceries. Working with the people that we work with there. We got a great young lady named Marcella who's just like, she's like, she came out of nowhere, and she's just like the person that holds us together. And like,
yeah,
it's nice and organized and clean, and she does, you know, all the work with us over there to make it a great shop. So then I can work with her some, and then we can come across, and Chef Guillermo's kind of getting himself organized to do things for for the specials for the week type thing, and we work together, and it's not it doesn't feel like work. It's just like, it really is like, he's in Krabby Town. It's very humbling. You just kind of like stand there like two young cooks and just talk about it, and then the next day you look at it and go, wow, that's an incredible dish. He rolled out a new menu yesterday that just like was so nice and so thought out and thoughtful. So it's like that type juggling thing, instead of me looking at it like, oh my god, I gotta do all this, I look at it more like, cool, I can do this today, right? So I think by reprogramming my thought process of not being like, oh, I'm so in the weeds, and there's financial stuff that happens, gonna move that around, and then adjust like where can I place these pieces to land of an evening where when I get home I'm actually, and part of why I like living in Danvers, I joke that I live in Boston but I vacation in Danvers on my day off, is that with that commute I also have time to like decompress.
Yes.
So then I'm coming out of a crazy Friday, but then when I get back to my family, I'm not bringing that right. Like if I live right behind here, which actually would be fun, I've thought about it before, like to get a place right around the corner. But then you can't stop and look at which balls are in the air right now. So I think that's the long answer to how do I juggle it all. Is like, I try and be thoughtful to the people I work with. I trust them. If we need to work on something, I communicate, but not angry. You know, like we talk about what can we do better, because at the end of the day, I own it. It's probably my fault somewhere along the line. You know, like I probably said something stupid, and then because you know I'm hyperactive. But if a paragraph's missing on a document, well, you said to go in this order, and I said, oh yeah, I did, didn't I? So let's fix it. My bad. Nobody's in trouble yet. You still have to pull out, you know, the tough guy thing. But I think one of the most humbling things was when my son was about 1.5. I am still working on the kitchen hotline chef calling ticket voice. So I accidentally turned that one, and he literally looked at me and just started crying. I was like, okay, aww. So I need to also like work on that. So one of the things I do, especially if it's a full location change, I will actually pull up to the location I'm going to, and I'll take 5 minutes and sit there for a second and kind of like, whatever somebody messed up at the last location is not the person I'm walking into now's problem. It's my thing. I need to put that over here for now and then go back in and now we're walking into the next location. And how are you today? It's not your fault that the salad cook served a peanut allergy or something. Like this is a fresh start. So the juggling thing is to juggle each location, meaning like juggle the problems that are happening or situations that might be going on in that location. And then move to the next location, put those toys away, move to this location, juggle that. And then my health and mind needs to then juggle and combine all those situations. But each one requires its own stream of thought, you know?
Yeah. And a big theme that you mentioned in all of that is really just decompressing and taking the time to sit, reflect, and take a deep breath before moving forward. And I love what you mentioned too about having your commute home, that really being a good opportunity for you to kind of unwind at the end of the day. That's how I feel about cooking dinner. I mean, talking about food, when I end my work day and I've had a stressful long day and I go cook dinner, I throw on my favorite music playlist and cook. And that's how I feel like I kind of unwind and transition into almost like that relaxation mindset. And I think it's important to have as a business owner.
I agree. Just to kind of And Chardonnay doesn't hurt. Right? Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, whatever your flavor may be, you can also call them that. You know, this is perfect time to add the garlic, and it's right to just relax and that's what again I love about the transition of business from 2019 to now 2020. We're thoughtfully cooking, and you're thoughtfully healthy. You're thinking about decompressing and paying attention to that, and relaxing and enjoying it, and you know that again is like the part that I enjoy of having the retail and having the shop and things like that is you can cook, you can garden, you can do these things, and you can still run good businesses.
Absolutely. And for anyone who's listening to this episode and maybe considering getting into the restaurant industry themselves, with you having 3 decades of experience within the industry, what advice would you give to them if they're just looking to get started?
I think the industry is going through an interesting point where we're trying to make the income levels balance. But just recognize there is a reality in most industries of working your way up through it. But I think that as you do that, to recognize that I believe, and I'm very proud to say, I believe my generation of chefs in the city are working very hard to treat people respectfully and mm-hmm. to call out those who don't. And to, you know, but it, sometimes I think it's just to recognize like there is a different discipline level that comes with cooking and or the industry. And I think it's just to embrace everything you learn along the way, even like the good and the bad. Because if you learn something of bad behavior, then you learn not to do that to people, right? If you learn something of good behavior, you physically watch 10 people lift up and go work like crazy to get this job done for the night. So that I think there's a lot of like, pay attention to the people skills that you're learning along the way as well. So, because it's hard to really get along with 20 or 30 people a night on dinner service, but if you actually recognize that if you start to play as the team, you start to work together and you develop those skills, like recognize that you're learning those things along the way. Because one of the things I talk about, you know, of the service sitting at the table, I'm a lifer. I'm in. I love restaurants. Mm-hmm. I love cooking, and I'm here for long as long as let me keep open, right? And so a lot of people don't recognize that when you're teaching younger people coming into this, that they may go on to be an attorney, they may go get on and get engaged, they may go on do business deals. And whatever I teach them about wine, food, and drink is also going to help them when they're in a social environment, right? And that's like, you sit down and get engaged. Well, why don't you pick out the wine? Okay, I'll take this because I learned it at Tip Tap Room or Crane Over Cheese Club and things like that. So I think recognizing who's a model behavior, who model behavior is, like I said, treating people right, recognizing the social things that you learn along the way, understanding there'll be a solid ride of like, this is not making a ton of money and you can make money. But when you make that money, don't become the guy you didn't want to be, right? So the guy or girl that you don't want to be. So like those things can change. But I think that the camaraderie of the business is amazing. The learning, the travel, all those things are great.
And like you mentioned earlier, just with you being able to actually go on the floor of the restaurant and see people, just meeting so many people and hearing their experiences and just getting to know the location that you're in.
Yeah. And it's people like from all over the country that you can come through, and especially in the travel seasons and foot July and stuff. So there's a lot of great interaction like that. And there was at the beginning of the reopening post pandemic, the staff gave me a t-shirt that says trainee on the front, because I would joke because I drop food off. Because if you're managers I work with, they literally could watch from across the room and be like, he's so not going to do this table right. So I'll go and like, I'm do as I say, not as I do. But they gave me a trainee shirt, and like it was funny. And the back of it says, every day I get a little bit better. And so here I am, my t-shirt, and people are like, oh, you're doing really good, trainee. And I went over to another location, and they're like, oh, you're doing really great, trainee. Like, pat me on the back. And I'm like, wow. So working as a trainee, working as though you don't know everything, learning every day from what is actually going on out there, seeing how, when you're not wearing the chef coat, how people can treat people. And then, you know, having kind of straighten that course out politely to the table that is spending their hard-earned dollar with you, and like to kind of get the front of the room with a trainee t-shirt is solid. Like it was a very good learning. And every day at 5 o'clock, I have to go, okay, which one's table 40 and which one's table 41? Because I'm reshifting back in the right location.
Too funny. As we get near the end of this episode, one of my favorite things to ask our guests that come on right here in Mass is what their favorite local businesses are to support. And so I'd love to hear where your favorite places are.
I've become, I've always, I used to have a restaurant in Cambridge there and in Emmonswear. And I was friends with, and I bought product from him many years. I mean, for 20 years since the Boston, I'd go over there and check it out. So Christina's Spice Shop and Christina's Ice Cream are two of my favorite. Ray owns it, and he's just like phenomenal human being. And his level of education on his own cooking is a fun thing to watch on his Facebook page or his social media, because it's like, he's excellent cook, but he's also making all the spice blends for all the chefs in the city. He's also like making all these incredible ice creams, but he's just a down to earth great guy. And I love that business over there. And it's like, it's small enough you can go in there and like quietly not talk about it and pick out something, or it's, you can go in there and talk for 2 hours about things. So I even have he's such a good, been such a good businessman and things. I even have a notebook in the Cranberry Cheese Club that says Ray on it. Because if you're a restaurant guy, you'd walk in and Ray would, they would write down what you ordered, and then Ray would invoice you. It was just a trustworthy good man. So I really, really enjoy those two shops. On the ice cream level, again, we have a friend of mine here, and Cohen has, he used to be, he might still be Eat Boston on Twitter, but back in the days of healthy Twitter, it was, he was super supportive of chefs, and they would do, we did like a Guacaholics Anonymous contest. We did, you know, Taco Apocalypse and things like that. So we had like these big chef events, and we would do it together. And he was very supportive of us along the way. And he's opened Gracie's Ice Cream in Somerville. I think it's fantastic. And what's fun is we actually sell his ice cream at Crane River, because he's just a great guy. And a lot of Crane River, as you walk in the door, there's a honey that a kid started making when he was 7 years old in 2020. And now he's got his own little company. There's the cutting board, the countertop was made by Nick, because he started solid door woodwork in the process. There's a young lady that makes the tortillas for us. My neighbor, Auntie M's mustard. Like, so a lot of the premise of not just the local cuisine or product, it's also like the people that tried really hard during the pandemic to get through it. So we have a strong, like a long line down the wall there of people inside the shop there, where it's people that, yeah, I could go on for hours about the amount of people I support and respect for small business. So that's, you know, two ice cream shops and a spice shopper are in the top of that. And then a lot of what I used to do when I was at a place in Back Bay is I'd make up a dish, and I'd run out the back door across the street there, back into Park Plaza, but that shopping center right there, run back through, and I would go to Bob Bacco and go, hey, what cheese do you think would work on this taco? What cheese do you think would work on the sandwich? So literally like give me some kind of crazy like lamb chopper cheese that would go on the lamb taco. And so Bacco's wine and cheese is kind of I tip my hat to the concept that was put together there with Crane River. Is a hat tip to both Ray and Bob on the shops they have there. So kind of just like making sure that we take care of the good things in life.
Absolutely.
So
so many
wine
good
and cheese.
choices. Well, awesome. Chef Po, this has been a really great episode, and I've appreciated having you on and having the opportunity to hear more about all that you've done throughout the past 3 decades. And now I'd love if you could share with our listeners where they can find you and everything that you're doing online in case they'd like to learn more.
We have, so my Instagram account that covers everything from family farms to family vacations is BePolite, P-O-E-L-I-T-E, BePolite, at BePolite on Instagram. And that's because we should always be polite to people. It also stands for
Absolutely.
Brian Poe, be polite. So then we're also on Facebook and Instagram with the Tip Tap Room, or Tip Tap Room Boston is our Instagram. And Crane River Cheese Club is our Instagram there. And then each business is represented on Facebook as Crane River Cheese Club, Tip Tap Room. And then the Chef Poe Inc. and Lepo Farms are still kind of like developing into their full adult selves post 20. So we don't. Any social media on those things would go into those three accounts there. So.
Perfect. And I will link to those in the show notes. That way our listeners can click through and learn more from there. But thank you so much again for being a guest today.
Thank you. If you're ever in the neighborhood, please stop by. Very nice to see you. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.